4. Now, the classic serial, a dramatisation of one of the seminal novels of the 20th century. Set in 1922, this is a portrait of the Jazz Age in all its decadence and excess. One of the greatest books ever to be written on the fallibility of the American dream.
The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald. Dramatized by Robert Forris. Episode 1.
The doorbell chain moves gently. It is long and ornate, only brass, surely. And the heavy ball on the end makes it swing like a slow pendulum. Inside this house, I suppose one might call it American cheerful Georgian palatial. Inside are two old friends I hardly know at all. French windows glow with the reflected gold of afternoon. The door, after half a minute, is opened by a butler.
Daisy? Daisy, are you in here?
She's not far away.
Hello. I'm Nick Carraway, a friend of Daisy and Tom.
I was sure you must be. A cousin, is it?
Not a close one.
But close enough to be friends.
Indeed. The butler directed me in here.
I can tell you a secret about that butler. He used to be a silver polisher. He had to polish a service of hundreds of pieces, absolute hundreds, from morning till night. It affected his nose.
Affected it how?
Horribly. He had to give up that position.
Do you have a headache?
No.
It's very dim in here.
It is absolutely blazing outside.
Well, may we open one shutter, perhaps?
You live in West Egg.
That's right. Not in this more fashionable egg.
I know someone there. In the unfashionable egg.
I don't know anyone yet.
You must know Gatsby.
I've only been on Long Island a week.
But you must know Gatsby.
Gatsby? What Gatsby?
Good God, it's pitch dark in here. Let's have some light.
Listen, candles. Let's have candles. Let's be romantic and gorgeous.
Absolutely.
So Daisy lights candles and Tom mixes cocktails for three. The other young woman is Jordan Baker, champion golfer, and she's in training. Will not drink. She is absolutely in training. We are in the candle-lit sitting room of a colonial mansion which used to belong to Demain, the oil man. Its lawn begins at the beach, a quarter of a mile away. There are sundials and red brick walkways outside where it is blazing, and a sunken Italian garden, and other gardens including a full half acre of roses, while a silver motorboat bumps the dock. My little place, across the water, I rent for $80 a month.
Nick, listen. I am paralyzed with happiness at seeing you again.
Bless you, Daisy.
We hear you're engaged.
Mm. No, I'm too poor to be engaged.
But we heard it from, what, three different people?
At least.
Then it must be true.
The banns were published by Gossip Only.
Mm-hmm. And you're in bonds now, is that right?
Right.
Who with?
Probity Trust.
Never heard of him.
Well, you will, if you stay in the East.
Oh, I'll stay in the East. If you want a place like this... East is where to be. Mm-hmm. Did I tell you I've converted the garage to stables? I've heard of it done the other way around.
And you're the absolute first, Tom, to do it the other way around.
Jordan, you won't take a drink, but I swear the way you talk. Let's hope you spend more weekends with us, huh? A bit of home and family will be good for you. Mm-hmm. Jordan's only family, Nick, is one aunt about 1,000 years old.
Tom hasn't changed so very much since I knew him at Yale. 30 now, and a little thicker at the waist, but the same sturdiness. The straw-colored hair, the hard mouth, and the arrogant eyes. He still gives the impression of always leaning forward aggressively. His voice has always had that touch of contempt in it, and the smile says, "You don't have to agree with me just because I'm stronger and richer and more of a man than you'll ever be." There were quite a few at college who hated his guts. I wasn't one of them. I always thought he approved of me and wanted my approval in return. And is there a vague wistfulness in him too? He was one of the most powerful ends who ever played football at Yale. Maybe he yearns for the dramatic turbulence of some long-ago game. Long ago, not to be recovered.
I stayed a few days in Chicago on my way here, Daisy. I have messages of love for you from a dozen people.
Oh, they really miss me?
And they have the left rear wheels of their cars painted black. Their mourning wreaths.
Gorgeous.
I'll take it. I've been waiting for it.
You haven't seen my baby, Nick. And she's 3 years old.
I'd love to see her.
You really should see her. You'd be amazed. But she's asleep.
Oh. Well, soon, I hope.
Only I'm allowed to see her when she's asleep. She's too gorgeous then for other eyes. Do excuse me. Tell him how gorgeous my baby is, Jordan.
My baby isn't quite 3 years old, but she is pretty.
I'm sure. Miss Baker, this Gatsby fellow you mentioned, I haven't met him, but in fact he's my neighbor.
He has a woman he sees in New York.
Well, as I say, I haven't met the man.
Not Gatsby. Tom.
Tom has a woman in New York?
Why, Mr. Carraway, you look as if you want to call the police. Everyone knows. Probably even the police know. But you'd think she'd have the decency not to telephone here when it's almost time for dinner.
Here they sit, almost shoulder to shoulder, young and rich and lovely, presiding at the marital table. A husband and wife I simply do not know. Daisy is my second cousin, twice removed. I spent some time with her and Tom in Chicago after the war, but who are they now? Well, Tom, with that pack of muscle shifting every time his shoulders move, he's unmistakably a man who has a string of polo ponies in a converted garage.
Civilization is going to pieces. Have you read The Rise of the Colored Empires by Goddard?
No.
Well, you ought to. Everybody ought to read it. The idea is if we don't look out, the white race will be...
slaughtered in its bed.
Submerged. That's the word. Utterly submerged. It's a fine book. It's scientific.
Mm-hmm. Claret after cocktails makes Tom profound. I've seen it before.
Markle, you like Jordan, but you can't deny it. The white race, we Nordics...
I didn't know I was Nordic.
The white race has produced all the things that go to make civilization.
What things?
You know, the science, art...
petroleum and Lillian Gish.
Don't tease too much, Jordan. My husband's a clever, big, hulking specimen.
Hulking? What kind of word is that?
Listen, I'm loving you being here, Nick.
Thank you, I'm loving you back.
You remind me of a rose.
I'm not even faintly like a rose.
Oh, but absolutely. The daisy and the rose.
Well, that's it. And listen, we should be in the garden. Come out with me now and hear the nightingale sing. He was right there on the lawn last night, singing away. I was sure it was a nightingale. He'd come over in the white star line.
Maybe he's gone home on the Cunard line.
Or he's been utterly submerged.
You know, I haven't quite got my bearings here yet, but I think my place might be somewhere just across the water there.
Maybe you could swim home tonight.
Well, no doubt Tom could manage that, but I think I'll drive round. Now, that's a sad little look.
I was wondering if we really know each other. Nick, really, I mean, why didn't you come to my wedding?
You know why. I wasn't back from the war.
Oh, of course. Was it ghastly, the war?
Actually, I rather enjoyed it. I've been restless ever since.
Me too. Restless and cynical and sophisticated. Did I ever tell you what I said when my daughter was born?
No.
Well, she was less than an hour old and... Tom was God knows where. And I was weeping and weeping. Abandoned and weeping. Then I looked at her and said, all right. I'll be glad you're a girl. And I hope you'll be a fool. The best thing a girl like you can be, I said, is a beautiful little fool. In this world. Oh, everything's terrible, Nick.
Everything?
I've seen everything. Done everything. Everywhere there is, I know. I'm sophisticated. God, I am so sophisticated, I might die off it.
Back at West Egg, I sit on an ancient grass roller in the yard. The house to the right of my own eyesore, at least it's a small eyesore, is colossal. An imitation of a Hotel de Ville in Normandy. A tower on one side, spanking new under a thin beard of raw ivy. There's a marble swimming pool. There are 40 acres of lawn and garden. The mansion of Mr. J. Gatsby. The night is bright with the silver pepper of stars. Wings beat in the trees, and somewhere there are frogs full of life. And a man has emerged from the mansion's shadow. Is this Gatsby? Should I call to him? No, because he is stretching out his arms in a curious way toward the dark water of the sound. The pose seems more, surely, than simply the easing of muscles. I could swear he's trembling. Although how can I know? He's 50 feet away and his face is hidden. I look seaward and there is nothing except a single green light. Minute, far away, maybe on the end of a dock. I look for Gatsby again. He's vanished. I am alone in the unquiet darkness.
So what takes you up to New York on a Sunday? You work bonds for the weekend?
I might do some reading. I've a lot to learn about the business.
I thought maybe you were meeting Jordan.
Miss Baker? No.
She took to you, no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
She's a good girl, Nick. She's from Louisville. You know Daisy's hometown? They were girls together.
And now she's a golf champion.
Well, you'll know the story, of course.
What story?
The bad lie, so to speak. Well, the gossip was she moved her ball from a bad lie in a semi-final, or dropped a new ball. She went on to win that match in the final, and the gossip died down. Point is, she'd have won anyway, even if she didn't cheat a little. And when it comes to men, she's straight and discreet. I know people say I'm not.
Straight?
Discreet. You know, I take my girl to good restaurants and bars. Of course I do. But that's where the good, respectable people are. Indiscreet, they say. They're resenting. As if I wasn't just as respectable.
Tom, are you?
What? That's a Sunday lunchtime, Nick. I had a couple of cocktails. I wonder how long we'll have to wait for barges today. Can you see how many?
Several, I think. We'll have time to study the landscape.
The wilderness. See the garage coming up on the right?
Repairs. Cars bought and sold, George B. Wilson.
That man is so dumb he doesn't know he's alive.
The wilderness. The Valley of Ashes. A fantastic farm where ashes grow like wheat into ridges and hills and grotesque gardens. Ashes take the form of houses and chimneys and rising smoke. Ash-gray men move dimly through the powdery air. With leaden spades they stir up the clouds. Above the gray land, the eyes of Dr. T.J. Eckelberg are blue and gigantic, retinas 1 yard high. They look out from a pair of enormous yellow spectacles. Some commercial wag of an oculist set them there to fatten his practice. He's long gone, but his eyes, dimmed a little by many paintless days under sun and rain, brood on over the dumping ground. On the edge of the wasteland is a small block of yellow brick, a compact main street, one shop for rent, an all-night restaurant, and George B. Wilson.
That really is a filthy little river.
Come on.
Where are you going?
We're getting off.
Why?
Sunday afternoon, Nick. No time for reading. There's someone I want you to meet. Wilson.
Oh, hello, Mr. Buchanan.
Hello, Wilson. How's business?
I can't complain.
Who'd listen, eh?
Ain't that the truth? So you here to talk to me about selling me that car of yours?
Well, not just yet. My man's working on it.
He must work pretty slow. Isn't that what you told me last week?
Not slow, Wilson. Meticulous. But if you get an impatient, I can sell somewhere else.
No, I didn't mean that. Merely asking. I can wait.
Good afternoon, Mrs. Wilson.
Mr. Buchanan, get some chairs, why don't you?
Sure thing, Myrtle. Nobody said they was planning on sitting down.
This is an old friend of mine, Nick Carraway.
Nice to meet you, Nick.
Hello, Mrs. Wilson.
Get on the next train to New York. I want to see you.
Myrtle Wilson, middle 30s. Slightly stout, but its flesh carried with sensuous ease. No gleam of beauty in her face, but there is vitality. One knows there are nerves in her body that smolder. She wets her lips. Tom's girl. The woman he sees in New York.
I have some things to get.
What things?
Cold cream, perfume, a few magazines.
Town tattle, I suppose.
Of course. And a movie one. And a dog.
A dog?
Don't you think it'd be nice to have a dog about the place?
No, I don't.
We have the sweetest little apartment on Fifth Avenue, Nick. You'll love it.
I'm sure it's especially nice, but I'll leave you here.
But no.
Don't hurt my girl's feelings, Nick.
I'll call my sister. She's said to be lovely by people who know. And we'll have the McKees come up. We'll have a sweet little party. Now, I think we have just about everything we need. There are snacks and candy on the table there. We have more than enough whiskey.
Well, we'll see about that.
My sister's as bald as she is pretty, Nick. We have ice, we have cigarettes, we have the charming neighbors, Mr. and Mrs. McKee.
On behalf of my wife and myself.
Chester.
We have afternoon and evening to spend. So, all we need now for the final sweetness is jazz.
It's money, money, money.
It sure is.
And without money?
Well, of course, Tom. Without it, we're sunk. That's obvious.
But what I mean is expense.
Of course you do. I had a man up here last month to check my feet. When he gave me the bill, you'd have thought he'd had my appendicitis out.
Why can't people look after their own feet?
And if there's something needs a
who looks after Daisy's feet?
I adore your dress, Myrtle. It really is adorable.
Do you like Europe?
I like parts of it.
What about Monte Carlo?
I've never been there, but I think I might like it.
Oh, don't be too sure. I just got back 2 months ago. We had $1,200, me and another girl. Well, over $1,200. We got gypped out the lot 3 days flat. But like you say, Nick, parts of Europe are nice. When they get married, that's where Tom and Myrtle should go. Somewhere in Europe, that's nice.
You think they'll get married?
Well, she can't stand Wilson.
I heard that, Sister Catherine, and it's not true. Can't stand him. I hate this son of a bitch.
I look at my watch. It is 6:17. We are into the evening and well into the second bottle. Tom emerges from the kitchen with a third. Just before the door swings closed behind him, I see Myrtle in there, leaning back with both elbows on a draining board, a beatific smile on her face. I look at my watch. It is 7:32.
Since we got married, Chester has photographed me a couple of hundred times. 50 of them are in frames.
Must be close to 50.
At least 50. You should do something with Myrtle in that actual dress. Adorable.
Oh, my sister's the adorable one.
Oh, now, Myrtle, am I really as adorable as your dress?
I've done a couple of nice things out on Long Island. Your neck of the woods, Tom. Studies. One I call Montauk Point. The other one is Montauk Point, the sea. Yeah. I'd like to do more in that neck of the woods.
I know what you should photograph out there. The house of this Gatsby man.
The Palace of Gatsby.
It's mostly new, but he's done all he can to make it look old. That tower of his wasn't even there last year. But he has it all draped in ivy.
To make it look distinguished.
Or better still, huh? How about a real challenge?
Chester loves a challenge.
Photograph Gatsby's money, if you can find it. He might be the type that lives on the idea of money, you know? The sheer bluff of it.
Might get a photo of thousands of kegs. Someone told me he's a bootlegger.
You live on Long Island?
West Egg.
Hmm. I was at a party there once. At the Palace of Gatsby.
Oh, it's right next door to mine.
You have a palace too?
Oh, yeah. $80 a month.
Oh. Gatsby's a nephew or a cousin of Kaiser Wilhelm. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's where all his money comes from. You make sure he gets nothing on you.
Gets what on me?
Anything. The lowdown. Information. He's a scary man. I'm scared of him.
I look at my watch. It is 9:05. I want to go out for a walk, but I seem to be entangled here as if with ropes around me and my chair. Outside, our line of yellow windows must be giving a small share of human secrecy to a watcher in the darkening street. He's looking up and wondering. I gaze with him. I am within and without. I am enchanted and repelled by the variety of life. Right now, I don't care what time it is, but I suppose I'll check again soon. It must be after 10. It might even be closer to 11.
Mr. Carraway, you all right?
Yes, I think so.
You looked a little...
Did I?
Just a little.
I've only been drunk twice in my life.
Heavens!
Yes, this is the second time.
Oh, wow.
The watch on my wrist has fallen asleep. So has Mr. McKee. Catherine has her head on my shoulder, but she's awake. I can hear her humming. The sound is like the word somnambulism.
Nick, what are you doing?
Let the poor man sleep.
I just like to wipe off the lather.
What lather?
On his cheek, dried lather. It's been bothering me all afternoon. All night. I'll do it gently.
I almost missed that man, you know. I almost married a Jew. He'd been after me for years. If I hadn't met Chester, I might have given in and married a Jew.
But you didn't. That's the difference.
What difference?
I did marry him.
You didn't marry a Jew.
No, she married George. Why did you, Myrtle?
Were you crazy about him?
The only crazy I was is when I married him. I've been living over that garage for 11 years. Then I met Tom on the train.
Let's change the subject, Myrtle.
Why? It's a good subject.
A romantic subject.
You had on a dress suit and patent leather shoes. I could hardly keep my eyes off you. And every time you looked at me, I had to switch my eyes up over your head up to an advertisement. Pair of soap it was.
Does it matter? Is anybody interested?
Are you interested, Lucille? Catherine? Nick? At the station, he put his white shirt front against my bare arm.
Well, for heaven's sake.
And I told him I'd call the police. Oh, I knew you knew I was lying. He got me into a taxi.
You make it sound like I dragged you.
No. I just kept thinking, he can't live forever. He can't live forever. Even Daisy Buchanan can't live forever.
Hey, this is wrong, Myrtle.
Wrong? You say Daisy can live forever.
You leave her name alone.
Why?
Just leave it alone.
Is it a holy name? The sacred name of Daisy Buchanan?
Myrtle!
Am I taking the name in vain? Then let the Lord strike me down. Daisy, 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 Daisy.
Now there will be bloody towels on the bathroom floor. There will be a woman's wails of pain and other women's voices scolding and consoling. But I'm far away from all that. I'm in the cold lower level of Pennsylvania Station with the Morning Tribune on my knees. I'm waiting for the 4 o'clock train. I look at my watch. Not long now.
I wondered if you might be here, as you live next door.
Next door, Miss Baker, is another world.
When did you finally meet Gatsby?
I haven't met him. But I was actually invited by an actual chauffeur. He brought a note across this morning. The honor would be entirely his if I would attend his little party. Signed J. Gatsby in a majestic hand.
His little parties are majestic, too.
I watched the preparations. An entire battalion of caterers arrived last night. Hundreds of feet of canvas, thousands of colored lights, yard after yard of buffet tables, and a quite amazing number of lemons and oranges. Then at 6 this evening, the cars started to arrive.
They're already 5 deep in the drive, and the night is absolutely young. Let us begin. I'm through training for tonight. The drinks are this way. I saw you play last week, Miss Baker. Well done. So well done.
Thank you.
The trophy was yours from the first shot. My name's Alice. May I call you Jordan? We've been together at Gatsby's parties before.
Have we?
Of course. Remember, I tore my gown on a chair.
Oh, yes.
Well, let me tell you, Gatsby made sure he found out my name and address, and within a few days, I got a package from Croyors with a beautiful new gown in it. Blue with lavender beads. And that gown must have cost $265.
His generosity is the stuff of legend.
But don't you think there's something funny about a man who would do a thing like that?
In what way funny?
Well, like, he doesn't want any trouble with anyone. Even a dopey girl like me.
Or with her concerned parents.
My parents are not concerned. They are very, very, very not concerned.
I heard somewhere that Gatsby's connected to German royalty.
But he was in our army in the war. He fought the Germans.
Maybe he was a German spy.
I did hear he killed a man once. Not a German. Not in the war. And when you look at him sometimes, well, he could have done. He's never still. You notice that? Always something moving. If it's only a little finger. Oh, good. Real music. We can dance now.
No, I think my friend and I will saunter.
All right, Nick.
Of course. See you later, Alice.
Well, Gatsby could never be a spy. He's too good looking. He'd catch too many eyes.
Well, now, this is majestic. You could feast 500 in here.
Don't exaggerate, Nick. With Gatsby, it isn't necessary.
I thought he might be in here. I must introduce you. They'll be serving the first supper soon. We might see him then.
You mean there's a last supper?
There are two. The second after midnight.
That's an imposing door. What's in there?
The library, I think. Let's try it.
Come right on in and look at this.
We were hoping to find Mr. Gatsby.
You want to ascertain?
Ascertain?
Well, you needn't bother. I already ascertained. They're real. Every single one of them.
Well, you mean the books are real?
Pages and everything. I thought maybe nice, durable cardboard. You buy it by the yard, but no. These are the real thing. Bona fide pieces of printed matter. This room is a triumph. The fellow's a regular Belasco.
He's a what?
David Belasco, a Broadway producer. His stage sets get standing ovations.
And I raise my hat to this fella. Realism, thoroughness, detail. He knew where to stop, too. He didn't cut the pages.
Really impressive, but excuse us.
I've been drunk for about a week now. I thought it might sober me up sitting in a library.
Has it worked?
Too early to tell. Were you brought, or did you just come? I was brought the first time, but now I just come. He expects it. He's happy with it. Me just coming and going.
We were invited.
And now we really must go.
Clipspringer. Tell him Clipspringer's in the library, taking off his shoes for a while.
And now they're trying to put it about that it's Negro music. I won't have that. Oh, they play it. I know they play it, and some of them play it well. But you know when they get really wild and fast, and they call it hot, and they call it bold, and they call it
Inventive?
Innovative?
Well, it's not. They're just getting lost. They're making mistakes. And they did not invent it. I mean, they don't invent. Never have. Oh, you see that man? That man's in Hollywood. I must have a word with that man. See you later, lovers. Mm.
I'm going inside for a sandwich. You want one?
No, thanks.
Will you suffer alone?
If I feel lonely, I'll smile broadly. Companions will flock.
Or look absolutely sad. That works, too.
Excuse me, old sport.
Hello?
I may be wrong, but were you in the 1st Division during the war?
Yes, I was in the 28th Infantry.
I'm not wrong. I was sure I'd seen you somewhere before. I was in the 16th until June 18, France.
The Argonne Forest.
Chateau Thierry.
It was a fiery time.
Huh. That's a good word for it. And confusing, muddled.
Loud.
Very loud. There was a lot of rain.
I remember the rain as being gray. Dark gray rain.
But I'm sure I saw you there at some point.
Well, maybe at a quiet point.
I was there only 2 days and 2 nights. But somewhere I saw you. I picture you like this. You're sitting on rubble. What's left of a farmhouse, I think. And are you drinking straight from a bottle of red wine?
That may well have been me. That may well have been the day I got drunk for the first time in my life.
I did my very best to die in that war. But listen, we'll talk more about all that another time. You know what I just bought?
What?
A hydroplane. It's like a really super speedy motorboat that takes off into the air. I plan to try it out in the morning. Want to try it with me, old sport?
I'm not sure how fast I might feel like moving after tonight. And as for up in the air...
Well, we won't go too high, and we can stay near the shore along the Sound.
Well, well. Having a gay time now?
Much better. But I still haven't met our host. Although I think I might have seen him one night. I live just next door.
You're Daisy Buchanan's cousin.
That's right.
I'm Gatsby.
For a moment, he looks almost embarrassed, as at an unwelcome confession, and then the full Gatsby smile. It has a quality of reassurance in it. It shows an irresistible prejudice in my favor. It understands me just as far as I would want to be understood. It believes in me as I would like to believe in myself. The smile turns away toward Jordan, and now I'm looking at an elegant young roughneck, a year or two over 30.
And you know our champion, Miss Baker?
We're beginning to know each other.
That's good. Now, I have to go to the house. I'm expecting a big call from Chicago. Jordan?
Yes?
Do you think you and I might have a talk, just the two of us?
Of course. When?
Say in about 20 minutes. I'll meet you on the veranda.
Fine.
If you want anything, old sport, just ask for it.
Who is he?
Gatsby.
I mean, where's he from? What does he do?
He told me once he was an Oxford man. England. University.
Really?
Oh, I doubt, really. Some say he's from the swamps of Louisiana. Some say the Lower East Side of New York. He drifted out of nowhere and built a palace on Long Island.
And what he does?
What he does is give big parties. I like big parties. They're intimate. At small parties, there's no privacy.
But Gatsby wants a private talk with you. I wonder what that's about.
I have absolutely no idea.
Hello again. I've decided there's no point.
No point to what?
Trying to get sober tonight. Look at this. Look at it all. Amazing. The man is amazing, but they say some crazy things about him. I heard a new one just a minute ago. Let me tell you, this one is a doozy.
And now there's the amazing man himself. Standing on the marble steps with Jordan, he looks from one group of guests to another, smiling, approving. And now he's smiling at Jordan, saying some final words to her. His manner is eager. I can see nothing sinister in him.
Amazing indeed. Absolutely.
You were with him for an hour.
Well, the hour flew. It really did. But I can't tell you. Why do people talk so close to each other?
Well, he swore you to secrecy?
I will tell you. I have to, but not yet. Sorry to be so tantalizing. I have to think about it.
Jordan, you are not a good driver.
Other people are. Other people drive carefully. They keep out of my way.
Well, what if you meet someone as careless as yourself?
I hope I don't. I hate careless people. That's why I like you. I have to be away for a week or two, a tournament.
May I call you then? In a fortnight?
Do that. And then we'll meet. Then I'll tell you such a story.
On my way across the lawn toward home, I glance back once. A wafer of moon shines over Gatsby's house. And from all the many windows and the great doors, emptiness now flows. Moon and emptiness endow with isolation the figure of the host on the veranda. His hand is raised in a formal gesture of farewell. A fortnight later, that figure is standing on the running board of his gorgeous, creamy, green-upholstered, bright-with-nickel car, which is parked in my rocky driveway. His fingers are drumming on the door, but then he is never still, always a tapping foot or a hand impatiently opening and closing.
She's pretty, isn't she, old sport?
She is indeed. Must be like driving in a kind of green leather conservatory.
Lots of glass, yes, and all sparkling clean.
Your staff are meticulous.
No, I polish them all myself. I really like the sound, polishing. You're going into New York today?
Yes, I'm meeting Miss Baker.
Good, so let's ride up together.
Oh, but I'm not meeting Jordan until this afternoon.
Have lunch with me first. There are a few things I'd like you to know. You've been at three of my parties now.
That's right.
And you'll have heard lots of stories.
Oh, well,
I know about the stories.
Speculation, really.
Right. I drift here and there, you see, trying to forget a sad thing. So I'm with strangers a lot. Stories get around among strangers. But I'll tell you the God's truth. I don't want you thinking I'm just some nobody. I'm actually the son of wealthy people in the Middle West. They're all dead now, the whole clan. You're from quite a clan yourself, Nick.
There's a family tradition that we're descended from the Dukes of Buccleuch.
And there's lots of money in wholesale hardware.
And the business is thriving.
Was it your grandfather who started it?
His brother, my great-uncle.
That's right. He sent a substitute to the Civil War and stayed home to start the family business.
How on earth did you know that?
Stories get around. Anyway, when my clan all died out, I came into a good deal of money. Lived like a young Raja for a while. Paris, Venice, Rome, London.
Just living and spending.
Mostly. I did collect jewels, rubies especially. I hunted big game and I painted a bit. Not to sell, just for myself. And all the while trying to forget.
Trying to forget what?
A sad thing. Then the war came.
When you did your best to die.
I seemed to have an enchanted life. I went in as first lieutenant, came out as major. Every allied government gave me a decoration. Do you believe that? Do you believe that after the war I went to Oxford for some real education?
Why should I not?
If you look in the glove compartment there, you'll find at least one of the medals. You'll find also a photo of me at Oxford, Trinity College, blazer and cricket bat and everything. The Earl of Doncaster has his arm around my shoulders.
The Middle West, you say, what part?
San Francisco. I'm going to ask a big favor of you today, old sport, or Miss Baker will.
Are you and Jordan...
In love? No. She'll explain. It's about the sad thing.
I'm not fond of mysteries, Gatsby. Why does this favor have to come through Jordan?
It's nothing underhand. Miss Baker is a sportswoman, you know. She'd never do anything that was out of the way. And first we'll have lunch with a friend of mine, Meyer Wolfsheim. You'll enjoy him. Quite a character, a real Broadway denizen.
An actor?
A gambler. He's the man who fixed the World Series back in 1919.
The caper in June of 20. Now, that was a piece of first-class cunning. I mean the word politely. I mean clever. Out of the blue. And no one got hurt too much. Everyone hurt a little, which mounts up, as I know you'll know. And the best thing about it was no one to blame. And the reason for no one to blame... Everyone in the picture was to blame. They're all over and around each other, looking for an explanation, looking for the motive, looking for a diagram of how this damn thing was worked, and who the hell was to blame. Then they stop. They look at each other, they look at themselves. We're greedy. We're too fast one way and too slow the other. We're all to blame. And what did it take to start this masterpiece of caper? A smile and a twinkling eye, which, as we all know, are innocent in themselves. So, you're looking for a connection.
A connection?
A business connection.
No, Meyer, this is Mr. Carraway, a friend of mine.
Just a friend? I got the wrong man.
Maybe you got a little mixed up, times and people.
Yeah, that happens. Mix-ups happen. I almost went into the place across the street because I used to go there. I used to like it better than here.
Across the street is too small.
It is small, hot and small, but full of memories.
What place is that?
The old Metropole. Full of faces dead and gone. As long as I live, I'll remember the night over there with Rosie Rosenthal. It was six of us at the table, and Rosie had eaten drunk for hours, lots of hours. 4 in the morning, maybe. If we'd have raised the blinds, we'd have seen daylight. Then a waiter says, "Mr. Rosenthal, there's someone wants to talk to you outside." Rosie, I says, let the bastard come in here if he wants you. I had him by the arm when I said it. He looks me in the eye. He had a sharp look, had Rosie. I see that look of his a lot, even these days.
So did he stay?
Of course not. Don't let the waiter take my coffee, he says. And out he goes. Gives me the look one more time in the door. Soon as he's out that door, they shoot him 6 times in his full belly.
4 of them electrocuted.
5. Remember Becker.
That's right.
You see this man here, Mr. Faraday?
Carraway.
Pardon me. This man here is as fine a fellow as all over town. Handsome to look at and a perfect gentleman. Mr. J. Gatsby. The fine and handsome gentleman with brains to spare.
Oh, you flatter me, Mike.
Don't deal in that stuff. It's all true. Made his acquaintance just after the war, and I knew right then, here's a discovery. Here's a man of breeding and talent. Here's a man an empire might grow around. I see you looking at my cuff buttons.
Ivory?
Human molars. The finest specimens. Let's have another round of highballs. And a fruit juice for you, Jay.
Thanks, but I really should be going.
Mr. Carraway is to take tea with a young lady.
You treat a good boy. You always got to be careful and kind with the women.
Excellent advice. Nice to meet you. I'll talk to you later, Gatsby.
Sooner, I hope, old sport.
Hey, Nick! What are you doing here?
Tom, hello. I was having lunch.
Never seen you in here before.
I've never been here before. Is Daisy with you, or is...
Business people only. You alone?
I came with Gatsby. He's over there with the little Jewish fellow with the big head.
I see the Jew.
Oh, but Gatsby was...
Disappeared on you, has he? I'm told he's good at that.
It's like sometimes he shifts out of focus. You think you're seeing him clear, then he says something or turns his head.
Turns his head?
And the focus shifts. It's hard to explain.
So he's shifting?
No, that's definitely not the word, but he's hard to pin down.
Maybe I should meet this fellow. Maybe I could pin him down.
Invite him to dinner. 2 Long Island notables meet.
Oh, no. Even if only half the rumors about him are true, he won't sit at my table. I can take a bit of brashness in a man, but he's vulgar on a huge scale.
He could always go to one of his parties. They're on a huge scale, too.
You know, if he had the nerve to invite me, I might just do that.
You don't have to be invited. You just go.
He's that vulgar. Open house. I go this way. When are you meeting Jordan?
20 minutes.
Oh, good. Then you have time for a drink with me and Daisy.
Well, I don't know, Tom.
Come on. We haven't seen you for weeks. 1 drink. It'll do Daisy good. Oh, for God's sake, Nick.
It is uncomfortable, Tom.
Uncomfortable.
You're my friend. Daisy's my cousin.
She's my wife. And she's good and true and wise. She may not always sound wise, but she is.
And Myrtle Wilson is...
I won't let anyone, anything, threaten my marriage. Do you believe me?
You know, I think I might just stop.
Stop what?
Shopping.
Daisy, you'd waste away.
That's just what I'm doing.
Well, you're looking the best of health.
Oh, skin deep, darling. I know my skin is glowing. I know my hair shines and my eyes gleam.
That is all true.
But inside, I am wasting away.
From too much shopping.
Oh, I don't want to wear the same dress every day. I'm not suggesting a nun's habit and a diet of rice and beans and only a straggle of wildflowers on the table. But I have to slow down. Simplify. Call a ceasefire.
A ceasefire on shopping?
Yes, because it's a war nowadays. A long campaign, or maybe it's meant to be an art. Whatever it is, you have to get it right all the time. It wastes you away, trying to be right all the time. Where have you been, Nick?
Oh, working mostly.
And seeing Jordan.
Yes, which reminds
me...
And
you still haven't seen my baby.
No, I haven't. We must arrange that.
Listen, I have to make a call on business.
From a public phone?
Of course not. Harding will let me use his office. Harding's the manager here.
Right.
It's important, but it shouldn't take long. Keep Daisy company till I get back.
So, Nick, keep me company.
Always a delight.
Delight has wasted away.
Oh, Daisy, you're too fond of that phrase.
It's not just a phrase. You know that place you pass coming into town? The ash heaps, the wilderness, all those clouds of dust and dirt.
Of course I know it.
Well, that's what wasted away really looks like and feels like. Miles of ashes and a vacant store and a Sloppy Place to Eat, and George B. Wilson, and more Miles of Ash.
Daisy.
It used to be a garden, you know.
The Garden of Eden.
Oh, much more exciting than that. Much lovelier. You could have so much fun there. Fun. So much you could risk your life. Risk your very soul. And it was still lovely, still exciting, still fun. The serpent was like an angel.
He was an angel.
He was?
Satan, Lucifer, he was a fallen angel.
Oh, you always knew the best stories, Nick. Nobody tells me your kind of stories anymore.
Well, I could tell you one now. I drove in here today with Gatsby.
Darling, you'd better go. Go and keep Jordan company. I've heard enough stories about Gatsby.
When I asked him what part of the Middle West he was from, he said San Francisco.
A tease.
A tease?
If you'd laughed at him, he'd have laughed right back. Or given you that smile of his.
Well, what kind of tease was it to take me to lunch with somebody who is obviously, or once was...
What?
The kind of man who wears human teeth for shirt cuff buttons.
Oh, my. The absolute variety of New York life.
On the drive up here, Gatsby told me that if I looked in the glove compartment, I'd find at least one of oh so many medals he's been awarded. And a picture of him at Oxford with an English lord and a cricket bat.
Did you look?
No.
I'd have looked.
He's up to something.
I know.
Yes, you know. For a moment, I thought he was in love with you.
No. He's in love with Daisy.
I look at her, at her golden shoulders and the challenge in her eyes. Her lips are trembling and moist with secrets. She sits up very straight, a personified challenge. But it's Daisy, I hear. Daisy with her frivolous melancholy.
Listen, there was a nightingale, singing and singing. But now he's abandoned me. And here I am, restless and cynical and sophisticated. I've been everywhere, seen everything, done everything. And it's all terrible. I'm so sophisticated, I might die of it.
And the first words I heard from her that night when she first heard the name...
Gatsby? What Gatsby?
When you turned up at Daisy's house, and I asked you if you knew Gatsby, remember?
I remember. And Daisy said, what Gatsby?
Well, later that night, she came to my room and woke me up and asked me again. Must have been 3 in the morning. Can you see her? Creeping from the marital bed, all gothic and ghostly in her white nightgown.
What did you tell her?
Actually, she was in stripy pajamas and her hair was in curlers.
From what you said, you had little to tell.
And I told her all of it. Then I described him. She said, it must be him. And I knew what she meant, who she meant.
How did you know?
Because I'd seen them together years ago in Louisville. Back then, 1917... Daisy was the most popular girl in town, by far. She always dressed in white, and she had a little white roadster. I absolutely adored that car. I was only 16. Daisy was 2 years older, and I was proud. Can you imagine me proud of such a thing? That such a grown-up beauty treated me like a friend. You know, almost a friend. I was passing her house one morning, and her roadster was parked at the curb. Daisy was sitting in it with a young lieutenant I'd never seen before. She dated other officers, lots of them. Camp Taylor's not far from Louisville. But this one was different.
Different how?
The way he looked at her. Oh, I'd seen men gaze at her before, all lovelorn and dizzy and devoted as puppies, hungry puppies, dangerous dogs. But this look was different. This man was amazed, engrossed, here's a word, enraptured. Imagine an astronomer looking up at the sky and there's a new, bright, astonishing planet up there. Oh my. Do I sound 16 again?
Did she introduce you to him?
I think she said his name. But then she talked about the Red Cross and bandages. We were both doing volunteer work. And she talked about another girl my age who'd got herself into some really embarrassing trouble. Gatsby never even glanced my way. I'm sure he didn't. I know he never took his eyes off Daisy. I didn't see him again for over 4 years.
On Long Island, in his mansion?
Yes. But even after I'd met him there, I didn't realize it was the same man.
When he asked to talk to you at his party, was that about Daisy?
I'll come back to Gatsby. Let me tell you a little more about Daisy. There was a story, it may even be true, that a few months after I'd seen her with Gatsby, her mother found her one winter night, all wild and weeping and packing a bag. The story was she was running away to New York to join a soldier who was being sent overseas. The story also says she never again dated another soldier. Then, in June of 19, she married Tom Buchanan, all pomp and circumstance. Did you know he gave her a string of pearls valued at $350,000?
Good God.
She threw them in the trash.
She did what?
This story is definitely true. I was there. I was a bridesmaid. I came into her hotel room the night before the wedding. They'd hired an entire floor of the Malbec. And Daisy was lying on the bed, stark naked and drunk as a monkey. She had an empty bottle of Sauterne in one hand and a letter in the other. "Gratulate me," she kept saying. "Gratulate poor Daisy." I just stood there. I was terrified. All of 18 now, but terrified, because I'd never seen a girl in that condition. She looked like a madwoman. Then she groped around in a wastebasket and pulled out the pearls. "Take them away. Just take them away." She said I should take them back where they came from and say she changed her mind. I finally managed to move. I got her into a cold bath. I gave her spirits of ammonia, put ice on her forehead, poured a gallon of coffee into her. And all the time, she held on to that letter. When she'd halfway sobered up, the letter was nothing but a scrunched up, sodden ball. She threw it in the wastebasket. Next day, she married Tom without so much as a shiver, and they went off to the South Seas. Do you know what I'd like to do now?
Tell me.
Go for a ride in a Victoria through Central Park.
Jay Gatsby and his secrets. He knows secrets, too, about my family, for instance. Well, not a secret, but I'm baffled as to how he knows.
He asked around. He has connections.
Yes, business connections. When he talked to you that night, it was about Daisy, about his feelings for her now.
Yes. He likes you a lot, you know?
And he wants a favor from me.
He wants you to invite Daisy to your house some afternoon for tea. And he wants to be there.
Well, that's a fairly modest request.
Tom mustn't be there. And Daisy's not to know that Gatsby will be there, I mean.
She has to arrive in all her innocence.
Absolutely. Of course, what might happen then?
Why didn't he ask you to arrange a meeting?
I did offer. I suggested lunch in New York. He was outraged. He wants nothing out of the way.
Nothing underhand.
Right. And your house is right next door to his. He wants Daisy to see his house.
It's quite a coincidence.
What is?
He buys a house on Long Island, turns it into a palace, and his princess is living just across the bay.
It wasn't a coincidence. He asked around. He used his connections. He tracked her down. Then he built his palace because Daisy was just across the bay.
I know that in a few moments I will kiss Jordan. this clean, limited, scornful young woman with her jaunty skepticism. I think she may be incurably dishonest, and the hint of scorn will still be in her face when I take her in my arms. But she will come into my arms just the same, in a moment or two, when I've put aside the memory of trembling Gatsby under the silver pepper of stars, his arms stretched out toward the dark water, toward the green light on the faraway dock. Daisy's light.
In The Great Gatsby by F. Scott Fitzgerald, Nick was played by Brian Dick, Gatsby by Andrew Scott, Daisy by Pippa Bennett Warner, Jordan by Melody Grove, Tom by Andrew Buchan, Wolfsheim by Carl Johnson, Clipspringer by Sam Dale, Wilson by Gerard McDermott, Myrtle by Susie Riddell, Catherine by Tracy Wiles, Chester by Patrick Brennan, Lucille by Christine Absalom, and Alice by Amaka Okafor. The Great Gatsby was dramatized by Robert Forrest and directed by Gaynor McFarlane.
And next week, Gatsby asks Nick to engineer a meeting with his lost love, Daisy. You're listening to BBC Radio 4. The news is next. And then Ross Raisin, a young writer who won much praise for his debut novel in 2008, God's Own Country, discusses the book with James Naughtie and a group of readers. That's in a couple of minutes.
I'd arrived in Edinburgh not knowing a soul, except the man I came with, a kindred lost spirit.
Personal reflections on Britain.
The grandeur of All Souls College, Oxford. It was paid for by the profits generated by the slaves who toiled and died at the Codrington Estate in Barbados.
I've also always felt envious of people who feel a deep sense of affinity to where they live, whether it's beautiful or not. Stevenage could never quite provide that.
BBC Radio 4's Book of the Week, Monday to Friday mornings at 9:45.